I've never felt like this before. It's like you just get me. I feel like my true self with you. Does that sound crazy? And it doesn't hurt that you're gorgeous. Okay, that's it. I'm taking you home with me. I mean, you can't find shoes this good just anywhere. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Message and data rates may apply. Consult a doctor prior to use.
Wow, you look amazing. What have you been doing?
I'm sure you've heard of Ozempic, Wegovy, and the other GLP-1 medications, right? Well, I found this great company called Zelthy. If you qualify, their providers can prescribe medications like Ozempic and Wegovy and other GLP-1 medications that are 80 to 90% less expensive, all 100% online.
I can get GLP-1 medications for 80 to 90% less and do it all online? No doctor's office or pharmacy?
Yes, Zelthy can provide semaglutide or tirzepatide, the active ingredients in Ozempic and other expensive GLP-1s. But for 80 to 90% less and ship directly to your door.
How do I get started with Zelthy?
Call #250 with the word care to get started today with Zelthy. Get the same active ingredients in Wegovy or Ozempic, but for 80 to 90% less and 100% online. Don't wait. Call #250 with the word care right now for a link to your exclusive offer. Call #250 with the word care. That's #250 with the word care. #250 and care.
Hey, it's a busy holiday week, and during this week, we are bringing you a look back at some of the most compelling stories and conversations we've covered for you in 2024. It's 24 in review.
This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi, featuring special guest and forensic scientist Dan Crane.
Some questionable things going on with the Colorado Bureau of Investigation, but they have attempted to nip it in the bud. But how much has been done already is the question. Yvonne Missy Woods, a CBI scientist, 29 years of tenure. This is what she has done her entire life. She retired amid allegations of misconduct of DNA testing procedures. Woods was accused of omitting critical information and manipulating DNA results by altering, deleting, or omitting data. Now, is this as bad as it sounds? I don't know, because there's so many caveats to this. Joining us, the man who knows a lot about it, who's been joining us for more than a year now on these topics, Dan Crane, forensic scientist and professor. Let's just start there with what we just talked about. What exactly was going on here?
Well, you ask, is it as bad as it sounds?
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, as a direct answer to that question, it could have been worse.
Oh, okay.
So there's scientific misconduct, and then there's scientific misconduct.
Okay.
The most egregious scientific misconduct is when an analyst does what's called dry labbing, where they essentially just fabricate the test result to inculpate an individual.
Okay.
So that's as bad as it gets. And it's not as if that's unheard of. There back in the 70s and 80s, there was a serologist who started working in West Virginia, and then graduated to Texas, got promoted, essentially moved up the ladder, and it was subsequently found to have been dry labbing results for many hundreds of cases. And, you know, it really came to light when somebody who was wrongfully convicted and sentenced to two life terms was able to have DNA testing done that proved the dry labbing had occurred. So it can be really bad. This analyst, Missy Woods, appears to have been doing is omitting failed controls. So when DNA labs are doing their testing, they'll include three controls with all of their experiments. They will do a negative control, a reagent blank, and a positive control. And it's fair to think of those controls as sentries. And if you think about that, even in the military sense of a sentry, just because you have a sentry doesn't mean that you don't have people sneaking past the lines. So there could be problems. But what Missy Woods apparently now it's been determined has been doing is in at least 652 cases she had taken out of the file for the case controls that didn't meet her expectations. So a negative control, for instance, that showed a result, or a reagent blank that showed a DNA profile, or a positive control that failed to show the DNA profile of just the reference sample that's put in to show that the whole test kit is working. So in other words, whenever there was some indication of contamination, it seems as if she withheld that information, didn't provide it as part of the case file. I can't quite tell, based on what's been publicly released yet, if she was replacing those files with ones that were clean from some other experiment that she had done, or if she was just omitting them, not sharing the indications of the failed control. There was an FBI analyst about 15 years ago, whose last name was Blair, as I recall, who had been found to be doing just that. When she had failed controls, she swapped out the computer files associated with the failed controls and replaced them with ones that she had generated. She had one really nice looking set of negative controls and one really nice looking positive control, and she just kept using it over and over again whenever there was a problem with the control in one of her cases. So yeah. Like I say, it could have been worse. She could have been fabricating data. That's not what they're saying they've found so far. But in 652 cases, going back only to 2008, they haven't gone all the way back to 94 when she started. They're still working their way through, but for the past 15 years, apparently they have 652 cases where it looks like she was playing these games with controls.
Is it more difficult to do that, to fabricate this stuff with DNA versus what you had talked about that was going on in the 70s? Are there more... I mean, I guess, is it more difficult to duplicate something or to get the result that you want with what we're dealing with today with DNA versus back then? Or can it be just as bad as what happened back in the 70s with the technology that existed at that point?
The wheels are turning here. I'm trying to think how it is that one might go about doing this and what would be the worst case scenario. It's not hard at all for me to imagine how it is that an analyst who's gone rogue could put a thumb on the scale in a way that, you know, really worked to the disadvantage of a person of interest.
Okay.
Or a suspect. It wouldn't be hard. It wouldn't be hard at all. So there's a lot of expectations of integrity for the people who are working in crime labs.
And sure.
They go off on their own.
Why? Obviously, you know, we're talking about motive here, but I mean, if you were to speculate, why would she do this? I mean, when there's the other cases too, there's probably some answers to those questions. But if you were just to guess on this, why would someone be doing this to begin with? Just to get their work done, to get the results out that have been requested so they can meet those expectations regardless of what they're putting out or what?
There's certainly some psychological aspects to this that are outside of my area of expertise.
But
I think you've already gotten a pretty good handle on what it is that might be in play. There may be a few other things as well. I think part of it might be these individuals are rationalizing it, thinking that, oh, look, what I'm doing is such a small sin, such a small transgression compared to what it is this accused criminal appears to have done, or what it is that prosecutors or law enforcement tells me this person has done, that it's not that big a deal. What I'm doing isn't that big a deal compared to what it is this person did. And it would be a shame if this person didn't have to pay a consequence for what they did just because of a small problem on my end.
How,
and
yeah,
And it does save them time. It saves them work. And I think there's also probably a lack of appreciation for the role that those controls play. They think, oh, hey, look, it's just a small thing. Some jerk of a defense expert's going to come in here and raise all kinds of heck about, you know, these couple extra little peaks on this graph. We all know it's not important. So I'll just save us all the trouble of having that argument in court, and I'll just put in a good negative control that that doesn't have these problems. And you know, I think also part of it has got to be that once you do it once or twice, it becomes the barrier to doing it another time becomes less and less. With you become desensitized, I think. And so that's why there are, once you do it once, the chance of being a repeat offender goes up a lot.
Want to listen ad-free? Want advanced access to all of our interviews before anyone else?
Become a True Crime Today Premium Plus subscriber on Apple Podcasts.
You get every episode commercial-free.
So you can binge on True Crime.
Until you can binge no more.
Search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts now. Or go to our podcast page and sign up now.
More of the Hidden Killers podcast next.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART, or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.